Freedom of the press is only guaranteed when you own the press.
It's time to hear the other side of the news.
Communication breakdown. Pause for the message. Wake up. Every station is a gentrification. Global syndication is the shaping of the nation.
The other side of the news.
What we want, what we need, what we want, what we need. But do we even know who plants the seeds? You think the media works for you, but it's a job for them. They're just selling proof. Got news goo.
What we need to know.
News goo.
What we want to know.
News goo.
What we think we know.
Got remote control to choose a show. But the more we watch, the less we know. Ignorance grows on the spirit like a tumor. Till freedom is a rumor.
The music you're hearing is from the dance sequence of the theatrical play Age of Gold. When I first read the promotion material for the theatrical play Age of Gold, I initially thought, great, this is a play about homelessness and street life. But when I sat down later with the playwright, Doug Massey, and the director of the Wesley Center, Father Tom Davies, I discovered there was a different meaning behind the title.
An Age of Gold is like heaven on earth.
We're speaking to Doug Massey, the writer of the theatrical play called Age of Gold. And these two gentlemen, if you just want to give your names...
Tom Davies.
And Doug Massey.
Now, you are both co-writers of this play, is it?
Doug's the author.
Tom gave me some excellent feedback, sort of filled me in on the lingo, the authentic lingo, and the thinking process, etc., people at Wesley Center. But it's a sequel to one that we did last year. One of the characters in it, his name is Ed, is a homeless person, and so he was sort of left. And I wanted to continue his story. And then we realized that it was Wesley's 50th, and Wesley's deals with homeless people, so it just seemed like a perfect match.
So primarily, this is a trilogy. This is based on a real person?
A lot of real people.
I saw the amount of people on the stage. You're trying to represent a number of different people that you would see in your shelter. You had Hugh Robertson's character used as the tool to explain what the word was, why it was used, what it meant.
The story is that Hugh was on the street at one point, but he's got himself together again and got back into a job. So he's sort of like a person in between. And so is my character, Ed. Ed is sort of in between as well. And Samantha represents to a great extent the audience in the sense that she is definitely middle class, but you take everybody else in the play are homeless people.
Right. How many real actors and how many volunteers were in that production? I saw
the majority of the cast was non-professional.
Okay.
Paul Vavasseur is an ACTRA member. Now Matt LuPaul is also a professional. So there's about four people. The rest of us are just sort of hanging in there, trying to do our best. And what we find is that we have this core of professionals. They sort of anchor us and they set the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else tries their best to reach that level.
You had a professional dancer on stage too?
Yes.
That trained the choreography?
Right. Melinda Seeley. Mm-hmm. She was our choreographer and she does dance and teach dance.
This is a lengthy play, but you have a prime objective in the writing of this play. You've used the Wesley Center as a resource center. I understand that you actually lived here for a while, but you've also worked at the center for some time, right?
As a volunteer, yeah.
So you've seen a lot of the problems, a lot of the people with problems that live on the street.
I've seen some, and Tom has seen much more.
So Tom basically guided you and helped you write this play.
I couldn't have done it without Father Tom or Brother Tom.
Many people seem to know me.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
More than I know them.
You've got a nickname, you fit in. That makes it a little easier sometimes when you're approaching a world you have no idea about and you're trying to portray it in a production.
It takes a while to build trust.
That's right.
In any community, in an average congregation, it takes 2, 2.5, 3 years. It takes twice that long to build trust with people on the street. They have no reason to trust anyone in authority. Often, authorities of one sort or another have done things that have put them in harm's way.
There's a very funny line in the play, and it is very appropriate that Tom has it.
Well, people with gardens, they hate me. Yes. It's based on the reality. The character that I play does give flowers. I've seen bouquets of flowers on our front desk that he has brought in, often brought in very intoxicated. I've asked him, where do you get the flowers? Well, people with gardens, they hate me.
Yeah, so everything is real.
Yeah.
As much as possible.
We were coming back on Martin Street. When I was with them. We were coming back with the two of them, he and his friend, had just done morphine. And he went into a yard and he took the flowers. And his friend was saying, you can't do that. But he took them anyways. And he gave them away to a woman. And she really didn't want them to start off with, but she took them. And she smiled. And that's why he took the flowers. He said he took flowers and he gives them away to total strangers just to see them smile. Well, 5 minutes later, the car comes back. Her husband's in the car. Here comes trouble. Mm-hmm. He gets out. He shakes this guy's hand, gives him $5, thanks him. He's got two people smiling. Hmm. We then said to him, look, you better take that $5 and go back and give it to the people that you took the flowers from. So he did.
He did.
He went up to the door, knocked on the door, apologized to the people for taking the flowers, tried to give the woman $5. She said no, and she was beaming. Then he comes back with the $5, tells us the story, and along come some kids, and they want to sell some weed. Well, it's regularly $10. It's a dime bag, right? But he says, I only got $5. Say, that's fine, here. And now, they're all talking, they're all friendly. These guys were incredibly charismatic.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's smiling. It was amazing, just incredibly amazing. All the people that he made smile,
mm-hmm.
because he went into a garden and stole somebody's flowers.
It's a very minute social scale, isn't it? It's a very tiny but an intense social lifestyle. They seem to have a lot of leisure, but there's a constant struggle going on. So it's not really that they're layabouts, as some people that are not familiar with the problems, in a constant fight for survival.
The intoxication would have nothing to do with the laziness. The intoxication is often something to do with pain. Some pain that's in their life that may go back to childhood. I don't know. I sometimes know and I sometimes don't know what the cause of that is. But most of the people I meet here, something bad has happened to them
at
some point in their life, and they have not had the resources to cope with that, and they move to some drug or alcohol that ends up being addictive.
You were trying to show the audience that there's a reason behind every person being here.
And every reason is different, and every person on the street is different. And we had some problem with wardrobe and with makeup. There was an attempt to try and follow the stereotype with hair or with the clothes. But what you notice on the street is people, the clothes they wear are not ripped in most cases. And people are not always dirty. I mean, they can come to Wesley Center, they can get a shower every day. They can shampoo their hair. They can wash their clothes. There's no shortage of clothes. Well, maybe for men, but I don't know. But most people I met on the street were decently dressed.
So in other words, it's not the vision that people carry in their heads, the person that's the homeless person.
There's no shortage of clothes, there's no shortage of food. One of the characters that Carl is behind, I've often heard him say, you got to be stupid to be hungry in this city.
Really?
Sure.
You want to explain that?
Well, Wesley Center has 3 meals a day. We served 110,000 meals last year. Salvation Army has food. Good Shepherd has a major meal every afternoon. Mission Services has food. There's adequate food. There's not good accommodation. People sleep on a mat. It's not very pleasant. They have a tiny locker to put their personal stuff. A lot of things get stolen.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no need to be hungry. There's no need often to be out in the elements.
I hear lots of stories. People are out in the elements because of they don't like the shelters. That's the complaint that comes back from workers that are on the street trying to get them off the street.
there's stuff goes on in the shelters that stuff will get stolen. There's a lot of people who have a lot of addictions here, and a lot of stuff will get stolen in a day. That isn't the reason most people aren't here. Most of the people that would use this center, when they're not here, it's because they've been barred, often for violence.
But you have a limit as to how many beds you can provide and people you can serve, right? You are the only 24-hour shelter in the city?
We're the only 24-hour-a-day operation that's open 24 hours a day. From 8 in the morning till 10 o'clock at night, we're a drop-in. People come and go. We serve meals during that time. There's caseworkers. There's a needle exchange. There's all kinds of activities. There's a public health nurse. There's an employment resource center. From 10 at night till 7 in the morning, we're a shelter like other shelters. Other shelters have beds. We have mats on the floor. We use the same space for everything. We have limits. We've hit the 90s. We've had 90 people sleep here. I've said our max is 55 right now, and which means we start phoning other shelters when we hit 55. We're the only shelter that lets people very intoxicated in, mm-hmm. So that leaves room for about another 10, because we can get up to 65 without it feeling dangerous or anybody's safety being threatened. So another 10 will come, but from 55 on, we're phoning other shelters, we're getting people places, we're putting people in taxis. Nobody is on the streets who wants a place in Hamilton unless they're barred from all the shelters, and the barring usually has to do with violence.
I think a lot of people in Hamilton don't understand this extent of the work that is done at Wesley Center.
Mm-hmm.
Wesley looks after the lowest of them.
Now, these are people with mental illness and various drug and alcohol problems.
Yes.
They're out of control emotionally.
Some of them are at some points in the day are out of control. Some of them aren't. There are people in lodging homes who come here are perfectly quiet and gentle. This is their equivalent of a Tim Hortons. They come, they socialize, they visit with their friends, they have a hot meal because they feel isolated or alone where they're living. There's lots of people living in little rooms in this mm-hmm. neighborhood who come here because this is their community.
I did an interview with Paul Johnson a while back when we were talking about the numbers of homeless and the numbers at the food bank, and he was telling me about working poor who would do their lunch here because they couldn't afford to eat.
There are lots of people who are sleeping here at night, have wake-up calls. 8 or 10 people a day we pack a bag lunch for, and they leave here early and they go to work. And it takes a while at minimum wage to accumulate first and last month's rent. If you've lost everything and you end up here, it takes a long time to get the resources to get going. I've seen people actually get themselves an apartment and then be told after, oh, now you've got to save to get the hydro turned on. You need $100 or $200 mm-hmm. to get hydro turned on. You need this much to get gas. And they'd actually rented a place and still had to sleep here because the place they'd rented was...
So the biggest problem is housing and utilities.
Throw in minimum wage is a huge problem.
Mm-hmm.
People don't make enough on minimum wage mm-hmm. to survive. We need a living wage in this community.
Yeah.
That people can, if somebody works full time, you ought to be able to afford a comfortable life,
yeah.
an apartment. Nobody should be working full time and stuck in some crappy little room.
Mm-hmm.
See, the dream of a lot of people here is to have a place of their own.
Mm-hmm.
And people have to understand that. I heard one woman. She is totally in a different world, and she said, you know, the housing price is so low these days, I don't understand why anybody would be homeless. She has no idea of the situations. There are people here who would just love to be able to rent.
There's another side to that. I've watched people with a place of their own. I talked to a guy 2 months ago, had a room. He told me it was smaller than his jail cell. It had a hot plate. He sat in it. He could just afford it, and he had very little money left at the end. Could afford this room. It took most of his OW payment, and he said, depressed. He couldn't afford to go anywhere, so he let the room go and moved back in here for good or bad. I don't think that's a great idea, but at least he had community. He had friends. He had people he knew. That's part of what the drop-in does. It provides a relatively safe place for people who don't have much and feel disconnected.
When I was first writing the play, I gave Tom the script, and then he encouraged me to go to the memorial for the Trout.
Who is the Trout?
The Trout was mythic in the streets of Hamilton, and many people bought the myth. I'll tell you some of the myth. The myth is a guy who presents as 65 years old. He would, in some ways, try to intimidate by going after the most powerful person in the room. So He came after me many times verbally. That's one side. Intoxicated, angry, threatening. Sober, gentle, kind, decent. I've seen them both. Man who struggled with alcoholism. He was a Newfoundlander. Sadly, a fair number of people on the streets are Newfoundlanders, and for me it has something to do with capitalism's need for a movable workforce. He raised a family in Toronto, held on a job for 30 years, is the truth about things. He was a working man. He lost the job because of his alcoholism. He moved away from Toronto. I think his main reason was he found himself an embarrassment to his family. He didn't like what happened to him when he became drunk. He didn't like what he did to his family. He moved to Hamilton. On the streets, he was picked up by the police 100 times in 1 year. I saw him the day before he died, walking down the street towards me. I didn't know which person I'd encounter, the intoxicated one or the sober one, perfectly sober. He came up, he says, "Tom, I know you thinks we hate you. We don't hate you. We love you. God bless you." Next day he died. He was a complicated guy, very humane, very decent, very kind. As many of these folks are, they almost seem to have a bigger heart than... They have a lot of compassion, and it gets them into a lot of trouble. They may have more compassion as middle-class folks. They're more porous, more pain gets into their heart.
More sensitive.
And they are unable to cope with some of that, and they drink.
So you pointed out Don Quixote as one of the characters, delusions, and yeah. The chase for Pablo Picasso. So, you know, you're aligning the message with the characters of the past, the artistic, sensitive temperament that was out there before them.
The thing is, like, Picasso essentially was a great Aztec god. He needed blood sacrifice. Everything was to be given up for his genre, for his oeuvre, his painting, Don Quixote. I mean, I see more humanity in him. Hugh in the final scene says, those people who have been to hell have a greater sense of the gospel.
And Jesus seemed to say, those who have been forgiven much, forgive more. Those who have been forgiven little don't know much about forgiving other people.
Thought that crossed my mind with this play. Will the people go because it's a story about somebody falling off the rails in society and ending up at a mission? Will they go out of curiosity or the need to live vicariously through this play?
I don't know what people's motivations for coming to the play is. A lot of them seem to support Wesley Urban Ministries in one way or another.
Do you feel that they go away knowing more about what's going on with the homeless?
That's the perception I've got from the audience. People have said thank you. People have said, you know, I think I understand a bit more. It takes a while before somebody will tell you. Mm-hmm. I'm here because I'm hurting. I'm here because this bad thing happened. I did two funerals one day that helped me understand that a bit. Funeral at 11 o'clock in the morning was for a guy who's 60. He was walking through a mall. Somebody banged, according to the people with him, banged into his head. Banged into him, he hit his head, fell down, collapsed. Security in the mall said, no, he was just drunk. So I don't know what really happened. But doing the funeral, his family said he was a perfectly normal person until he was 12 years old. At the age of 12, he was crossing Cannon Street, not aware that his 4-year-old sister was behind him. She got hit by a car and killed. And he crashed. He didn't seem to have the family, the resources, the personal strength to cope. Maybe most of us couldn't. He ended up almost all of his adult life a drunk, mental illness problems, emotional problems. The afternoon, I buried a woman who was 40. Strangely, she had lived with some alcoholism much of her adult life, but raised a family, good kids, good everything, was engaged to a man who was involved in a car accident on Cannon Street again. He died. And she crashed. She became a crack addict and died of an overdose in some crappy little garage bay in the East End. And again, same story from family. She was a good person. She struggled with life some. This terrible thing happened, and she just couldn't cope and ended up with an addiction. Both of them ended up eating here, sleeping here. There's probably stuff out there that would break all of us. I used to meet homeless people in the 60s. The one thing they had in common, almost all of them, were World War II vets, and they saw stuff in the war.
They could understand each other.
They could understand each other, but they saw stuff in the war they couldn't cope with. They talk about syndromes after Vietnam.
Yeah.
People can take a certain amount of stuff in their life, and if they get too much...
Too stressed, they mentally break down.
They crash.
It's too shocking.
So in the play, Hub says, some people just wasn't made for life down here. There's a contrast I'm trying to make. Picasso went looking for poor people and exploited them and romanticized their poverty. What I sought diligently to do in this play was not to romanticize the homeless that are being presented, but show them as they really are. Tom's character, Hub, is a violent person. Not that he goes looking for it, but it finds him. He's based on this real guy who did protect trout, who caused a lot of people upset. So this guy told me that he had to stand between the punch and trout over and over again. So he spent a whole summer looking like a raccoon.
It looks like violence. We only see the end result, but often he was wading into a situation. He said, this is unacceptable. You don't do that around me. Middle-class folks, we don't do that. We talk about stuff. We do stuff. The
language that they used is gritty and aggressive. They tried not to use that kind of language in the presence of young children. In the one film sequence, Hub says he couldn't drive a stick through shit. And then we're all laughing. And then the next thing is a mother comes through with a child, and the actor who's playing the trout apologizes. And my character says, well, I think the woman has heard that word before, thinking that he's apologizing to the woman, when in fact he's apologizing to the child.
Also, you were introducing the public to a lot of the lifestyle that the homeless go through. You're talking about drinking Listerine, the whole business about the contents of the Listerine bottle.
Do you remember what the first ingredient of Listerine is? Alcohol.
Yeah. I thought that was a good subtle use of explaining their world, explaining why they drink Listerine, and explaining what kind of poison it is, all in the same thing. So it was cleverly written in a lot of spots, and I was commenting before, the fact that you used video to do a scene setup, I thought was brilliant. It allowed us to go outside and into their world, to see them in their setting without having to physically being there.
Let me just mention that the person who is behind all of that is my business partner, Jeremy Major.
You wrote the music?
I wrote the lyrics. He writes the melodies. He's also a cinematographer, so he did all the film. He directed that. I wrote the script for the film sequences, but he did all the shooting. He came with a camera. He went on locales around here, and that's the other stuff that you saw between the scenes that set the scenes up.
You were talking about poverty, is the impression I got from the press release, and how one man fell into it with his drinking problem. What would entice people to come and see this play if they have no knowledge whatsoever and they're paying high taxes? And right now on their property tax bill, they see a big chunk of money going out for social services, which they didn't used to see until the Tories got into power. Now it's on their backs, they're paying for it, so they're a little, maybe have some animosity towards these people. They say, just stop drinking, get a job, you know, get up off your ass, stop being a bum. And the only thing I could come up with is just voyeuristic curiosity. What's it like to be down and out and on the street? And I don't want to go there to find out, but maybe I'll go to this play. And
Well, if some people come with that motivation, I hope we've given them some food for thought. Understand, there's a lot of pain behind the people who are on the streets. A lot of sadness, a lot of tragedy has happened in people's lives. Some of it through bad choices, some of it through situations that the people didn't choose to be in at all, but the bad things happened to people. The difference between, on occasion, the difference between somebody on the street and somebody in Ancaster is little more than luck.
There was a line somebody used. This could happen to a number of people within a week because our middle class is so financially stressed now because of our cultural system has gone into a spin of the makeup of society has really changed. We've got a big gap between rich and poor.
There's a line like that in the play. I don't believe it myself. I think I'm a middle-class person. A lot of bad things would have to happen before I'm in a shelter. I'd have to make a lot of bad choices. There are a lot of working poor. There are a lot of people at low-paying jobs who are at risk. There's a lot of people in this community at risk of homelessness.
One paycheck away from losing their home.
People say that. I don't think that's particularly true of middle-class people. But there are a lot of working poor. There are a lot of people living in poverty in this community, 20%. The population of Hamilton live below the low-income cutoff. That's last fall were about 20%. Over 90,000 people in this community, 25% of them children, are living below the low-income cutoff in this community. Those folks are at great risk. So you get 90,000 there, and on any given night, 400 or 500 people in the shelters. and three or four times that many couch surfing and things like that.
Mm-hmm. The hidden homeless, the ones that live with friends,
right.
The couch surfing stories, yeah.
That's right.
To make that more realistic and seeable or knowable, just consider taking those 90,000 people and you could put them into Iverwind Stadium three times.
Mm-hmm.
That's the extent.
It's amazing for the size of the city.
Yeah, you can say 90,000 people, but that's just figures. You need to see
visually,
the faces of those people.
Highest in Ontario, the city. The highest in Ontario and probably higher than the rest of Canada. People always talk about it. It just seems to get worse and worse. We have a radical group in Toronto called OCAP running around stealing food from grocery stores to feed the poor. Now they're on a new idea of making sure that everybody on welfare gets the diet supplement.
Yeah, I think to steal food to feed the poor is probably not a smart idea. It's just about getting headlines, I think.
Yeah.
I think they're, in Hamilton, we have sufficient food. Food isn't the issue. Distributing it is sometimes, storing it is sometimes.
So you see, this is the ultimate frustration that we're having here. We have a message. It's important we believe in what we're saying, but it's hard to get to people because they're all this. They have this mindset. And so, well, yeah, exactly. Why would I want to come out here and pay $25 to see somebody who lives in pain?
Yeah, well, pain wasn't the first thing that came up originally in some of the conversations I've heard from people who don't have a problem or haven't been near it. And it is a life of pain. It's not something people choose. And this is one of the problems I have when I talk to people about it. People don't choose to live on the streets. I'm sorry. I don't agree with that.
However, I think our audience, what we really, who we really want to get to,
mm-hmm.
are the well-off.
Mm-hmm.
We had the mayor of the city of Hamilton there. We had David Christopherson there, our member of parliament. Dave knows stuff. We had the senior team from the city social services department. Mayor afterwards told me he thought it was an excellent play, really appreciated being there.
Mm-hmm.
So those people heard some of that message. Much of the funding for a place like Wesley Center comes through the city.
You went through a dialogue situation at one point in the play where you were explaining why the hookers were there, mm-hmm. and explaining why so-and-so was there, and it just ran right through it like I think it was a pain dialogue. And you got a lot of information.
The first scene is you see all of these characters, and you don't know why.
And you form opinions.
At the end, then you get the background.
One of the hidden message, I'm not sure it's an intentional message of the play, is that life is not something we can control. We participate in good, you know, because somebody is well off and somebody is poor doesn't mean it's because one person worked hard and one person didn't. There is so much luck, there is so much, people who are successful are standing on the shoulders of generations of people who are successful. They have good genes, they've had good luck.
In particular, the one song, Ever Fly Fishing for Mushrooms. Now, what you see there, this sort of flies away from reality a bit, because
mm-hmm.
that kind of a confrontation on the street probably wouldn't happen, but it's supposed to be humorous for relief from the other stuff that's being presented, because the other stuff is definitely a challenge. He means that Don Quixote, this guy who thinks he's Don Quixote, is taking these flights of fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what ever fly fishing for mushrooms means. This guy sort of lives over there in this fantastic world. But Don Quixote is much more than comic relief. He's a Jesus figure. He
okay.
knows more about this mad world than this mad world knows about itself. And a lot of the politicians that we're dealing with, and maybe it's because they have to be, because they are part of this age of iron.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that he wants to change. An age of gold is like heaven on earth, bringing God's king. He's always got these flights of fantasy, but maybe he's not so stupid after all, because he says, whoa, wait a minute, take a look at the way this world runs. We make the same mistake over and over and over again. Isn't that madness? Why would you call me mad?
It's the way the corporations are now ruling the world. We've been talking to Doug Massey, the author of the play Age of Gold, and helping him with the play, Tom Davies, who is the director of Wesley Center. Thanks very much, gentlemen.
An age of gold. CFMU.